Malo, buenas noches.
Malo, buenas noches. I can see Mr. Inanna is back.
Yes, I'm back, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Welcome to the world of the Gabriel.
Yeah. But I still have the energy in you, I am, but not at all.
Okay.
Anyway.
Today we will be getting an update on the issue of national minimum wage. I think all of us have been got to have an understanding of what the challenge is, and I hope therefore that the department is ready. We also requested the chair of the commission, because we thought that it would be important that he or she be around. We requested the department to arrange that for us. I will hear from them what then is the situation. We will, before we then allow either, I think it's the DM or the minister to shortly give us a political brief, we will then allow Mr. Sakaza to take us through the roll call and if members, okay, guests that are here, will request them to identify themselves as they usually do. Virtual meetings have not changed anything. We are still in a commit. Mr. Sakaza, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to Chair, to the committee, and to PM and the Department of Labs. Chair, we have today from the Portfolio Committee, we have yourself, Chair. We've got Honorable Dave, Honorable Davani, Honorable Puma, Honorable Bigram, Honorable Cardo, Honorable Inanna, Honorable Mkondo, and Honorable from the Portfolio Committee, Chair. And then from the support structure, got myself, Bosia, Media Assistant, Kutian Davani, and Mumtani Novo, the Conan Advisor, and Mr. I also received an update from the minister that we are not meeting at this point, but it's very clear.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sakaza. Do we have any guests that they should introduce themselves?
Morning, Chair. I'm Adrian van der Walt. I'm the chairperson of the National Minimum Wage Commission, and I'm here, so I'll make a short presentation, and then Dembikosi Mkalipi and I, Dembikosi from the department, will then answer your questions.
All right. Who's here? Who's Elisa?
Good morning. I'm Elisa Duku from PMG, Parliamentary Monitor Group.
Why should I have to call you when you know that you're supposed to be doing that?
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Having said that, GM, if you have some short political input on the matter, and then we allow the DG is here to just take us through who is here, or let's allow the DG to just take us through who is here from the department.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and the Honourable Members. The Chairperson of the National Minimum Wage Commission has just introduced himself, Professor Van der Walt. We have Mr. Temugo Simkalifi. We have Tando Wababa of the PLO, Zandi Mueli from the DM's office, Garabo Mokhakhale from the DM's office, and Weli Lesnego from my office. Okay. We are led by the Deputy Minister this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much, TG. We will then give the DM just a total overview on the matter, and then we hand over to the department who starts. I hear the chairperson of the commission is here, then she will do that, and then we will then make a presentation to the dependent on you, DM. There's a problem with your connection.
Am I not on now?
You're not audible. GM, can you say Inanna switch off his mic and his video, please? GM. She's gone. Okay, back. GM?
Can continue? You're able to hear me now?
Yes, we're able to hear you. Your mic is muted.
Sorry?
Can you unmute your mic? Okay, all right.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
So I'm standing up actually just to get some sort of network, but I was acknowledging protocol, Honorable Chairperson, acknowledging also the presence of the Chairperson of the National Minimum Wage, Professor Van der Waals, amongst us. Our guests, ladies and gentlemen, let me greet you this morning once more. I'm sure, Honorable Chairperson and members, you might have heard on the news this morning that the UK Supreme Court judgment directing the Uber drivers that they must be classified as employees and not as independent contractors. So I'm sure you would understand how this will have far-reaching implications for our country, and for our country, like all other countries all over the world, facing class action in this regard, and the implications of the UK Supreme Court will be burdensome on our Labour Relations Act, basic conditions of employment, and the national minimum wage itself. So I think at some point we must have we must sit down and as a portfolio committee begin to study this judgment and familiarize ourselves with its content, so that should it happen that we are affected, we'll be ready for such eventuality.
Hello. Sorry.
Okay. I was saying, Honorable Members, rest assured that the implications of this judgment will be very devastating for our country. And the research resources that we have, and all eyes are on the Minister of Finance today, and our hopes and wishes are on the balance and well navigate the budget speech in times of crisis. So I'm sure we are all abreast with the fact that the CPMA is estimated that 72% of the labor force in South Africa falls under its jurisdiction and the remaining 28% of the workforce within their cost. So this figure demonstrates the vulnerability in the South African labor market and its indication of the huge responsibility carried by the CCMA compared to us. Or maybe, honorable members, when the time is right, especially in the pandemic, when it destroys jobs, we must consider the Section 189A on small-scale retrenchment. However, retrenchment are allowed in terms of our legislation without necessarily having to invoke Section 189 and 189A. But unfortunately, honorable members, for some families, this is all they need to survive for a country that is needing jobs. Our legislation is bound to protect every form of jobs. So the promulgation of the National Minimum Wage Act, which came into effect in January 2019, was meant to intervene in the wage inequality and disparities, especially in the vulnerable sector. So we have made significant progress in this area since the 2019 promulgation, although some cases of high wage violations still exist. So the National Minimum Wage Monetary Responsibility to businesses and workers, employers, not a fund that must be left to government alone. Without any some compliance to the National Minimum Wage Act and others. So we don't need to consider the fines or worry about the number of inspectors and our capacity to enforce the need of compliance to all of us. We are taking responsibility and patriotic. So let us just be patriotic citizens and make the work of the community easier by appreciating those who make our lives easier and make and take care of our households and do good by them. So after it's
your connectivity CM is very bad.
Am I still not audible, Chair?
I think if you can try and wrap up, it cuts, it keeps on being in a challenge.
I think I need to take this opportunity to thank you, Chair, for this opportunity, but I was saying that the increase is too little, but there are many other employers who are complaining about their increase that's supposed to be affected as per the minister's instruction. So some of us use this money to cover and but we complain and we lodge disputes and we criticize government when we should be taking care of those who look after our families, and this is at some point it has to change, honorable members. So I think we shouldn't be spiteful with the National Minimum Wage Adjustments. We must protect the workers while keeping them in productive business. What is also more important, honorable members, is that we make provision in our legislation for the distressed employer to apply for extension today. So let me thank you, Chairperson and honorable members, for this opportunity. And then I'm sure honorable Chair, through you, the DG and his team will take us through the presentation. I thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. Thank you very much. Can we, Chairperson of the Commission, we will then hand over to you and then for you to make some remarks, because it's the first time that you are in this to be invited in our committee. I'll hand over to you, sir.
Good morning, ma'am. I just want to address
Sorry for that. Because it's the first time. Is it possible for you for us to see your face?
Yes. So it's not a very great. Can you see me?
We see half of it. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Honourable Deputy Minister Molloy, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Committee, the Director General of the Department of Employment and Labour, all the other staff members and managers from the department, staff members from the Portfolio Committee, and guests, thank you for inviting me with the department to address you on the National Minimum Wage Commission. It's true, you we have been appointed, or we were appointed from the beginning of 2019, but I've not had the pleasure of addressing you since then, so it's a first for me. What I will do is I will present make a short PowerPoint presentation, and then from there we will field questions or comments from the members of the committee, and of course the department, especially Mr. Temikosi Galipi, who works very closely with the National Minimum Wage Commission, will also be part of the discussion, as well as the DG and other staff members. So if you just give me time, I'll upload the presentation.
Check if you were given this thing of this system. I don't know whether you were given the right to be. Can people who know how to
ask? Yeah, you had the it was sent. I see with the invitation the presentation was sent to you. So somebody else from your committee or the secretariat could upload it. I struggled to get it up.
To you, Mr. Wedding is the one who has been given the right to fly today. I'm sure you're busy with it.
Okay, thank you. So I don't have to try. Yeah, so I really don't have the access to do it.
Struggle
to get it on to share it with you.
No, it has been shared.
Okay, there. Yeah. Is that, you can see it, is it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Then I'll start. The National Minimum Wage legislation was proclaimed or promulgated in 2018 and came into effect on January 2019. You will all remember that before that there was quite a history of moving from the Toro determination system, where minimum wages were established for different vulnerable sectors, to a national minimum wage. It took a number of years of negotiation at NEDLAC, and then Deputy President Ramaphosa was running this program to get a national minimum wage in place for South Africa, and then eventually it was on the 1st of January 2019 took effect. So it sets a historic precedent for the protection of low-earning vulnerable workers and provides a platform for reducing inequality and the huge disparities in income in the labour market based on one national minimum wage. So prior to the promulgation of the national minimum wage, wages were set by a sector basis through bargaining council agreements negotiated between trade unions and employers, and sectoral determinations, which was the system. So when the national minimum wage then took effect, there were 9 sectoral determinations which set minimum wages and other basic conditions for certain sectors, So it was a range from contract cleaning, learnership, domestic sector, wholesale and retail, children in the performance of advertising, artistic and cultural activities, the taxi sector, forestry sector, farm sector, hospitality sector, and others. What has happened with the promulgation of the national minimum wage, these sectoral determinations remained part of the law as schedules to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, because they also contain other conditions of employment and therefore are still in force, in as much as the sectoral determination provides for wages, minimum wages that are higher than the national minimum wage. When there is an increase, like there would be an increase now on the 1st of March, that percentage increase is then also given to the different sectors based on the sectoral minimum wage, in as much as I indicated that wage is higher than the national minimum wage. So, well, from a policy perspective, then it was decided that although we had the system of sectoral determination for a long period, there were still high wage violations, and one of the causes was that there was a complexity in wage levels, you can understand. So a single minimum wage is preferred by minimum wage experts in the ILO because it covers all workers, benefits all workers equally, it is easier to enforce, and it enjoys a higher compliance generally, and it can be set to serve a broader policy objective such as the reduction of poverty and inequality nationwide, and not only sector by sector, because with the sectoral determinations there were sectors that in a sense fell between the cracks, like the sector that provided for caregivers, for instance. There was never a sectoral determination promulgated for them, and there was therefore no minimum wage in that sector. So as I indicated, they remain in place because they regulate other conditions of employment peculiar to the particular sector and different from what the BCA regulates, because everybody is covered by, all employees are covered by the BCA. Section 51(3) of the BCA also provides that any sectoral determination that were higher, as I indicated, will be increased with the percentage increase that the national minimum wage will be increased by. So presently it's the contract cleaning sector, and the wholesale and retail sector's minimum wages are higher than the national minimum wage as a result of the two sectoral determinations still operating in those specific sectors. Thank you. We can move on. So perhaps just before I look at the annual review of the national minimum wage, I can take you, it's not on a slide, but I can tell you what the functions of the National Minimum Wage Commission are, or even before that, say how it is constituted. I trust you know, or most of you would know. The National Minimum Wage is a commission that's appointed by the Minister of Employment and Labour. Appointed me as a chairperson, and then there are three other expert commissioners that's appointed by the Minister as well. So they are experts in economics, law, second business of employment. They, at the moment, all three of them come from University of Witwatersrand, Professor Imran Balodia, Dr. Sarah Moshitsu, and Niva Machetla. They are the three experts that were appointed by the minister. Then there are three members nominated by the organized labor, and then there are three members nominated on the commission by Business South Africa, and then there are three commissioners nominated by the community. So unlike the previous commission, Employment Conditions Commission, that looked after the sectoral determinations, the National Minimum Wage also includes a representation from community. Now the function of the National Minimum Wage Commission is this function: to review the national minimum wage and recommend adjustments on an annual basis. So the commission must investigate and report annually to the minister on the impact of the national minimum wage in the economy, collective bargaining and the reduction of income differentials and make such information available to the public. Also, investigate income differentials and recommend benchmarks for proportionate income differentials. Then the Commission must set medium-term targets for the National Minimum Wage within 3 years of the commencement of the Act, the National Minimum Wage Act, and advise the Minister on measures to reduce income differentials or any other matter which the Minister requests the Commission's advice. Also advise the Minister on sectoral determinations and on any matter concerning basic conditions of employment, and then any other function that's required by the Commission in terms of any other employment law. So the National Minimum Wage Commission's primary task is to investigate the effect of the wage, to monitor the effect, and then to make recommendations for adjustments annually, but it also has other important tasks, as I indicated to you now. The adjustments or recommended adjustments to the national minimum wage should be made with regard to evidence on the impact of the minimum wage on collective bargaining and the reduction of income differentials, as well as the prevailing situation in the labour market, the broader economy, and in household poverty and inequality. All these factors must be considered. Soon after the Commission was established, it contracted the EPRU of the University of Cape Town and the CSDA at the University of Johannesburg, two reputable research institutions, to undertake a combination of quantitative and qualitative research regarding the impact of the introduction of the national minimum wage. So you can move on. The first review, so that was in 2019, because of the processes, it of course took a few months before the service providers could commence with the research, and by the time that we had to recommend adjustments in 2020, the researchers had thought it was not long enough period in any event. I mean, this impact, can't see an impact of such a introduction of the minimum wage within 2 or 3 months. We had not had the outcome of the results. Because it's based, the results also, the survey is based on the quarterly labor force survey data from Stats. We arrange the Stats that the data is made available per quarter and not annualized. That's the most appropriate labor market data that's needed to assess the impact of the minimum wage and then to provide evidence-based advice. Because it was important when the National Minimum Wage Commission was established in the negotiations at NEDAC leading up to the national minimum wage, that the minimum wage must base its recommendations and decisions on evidence base, and that is what we seek to do. So at the time in last year, because we didn't have the research results available, we recommended to the minister to only increase the national minimum wage with a CPI percentage increase. At the time it was 3.8%, so it moved from 20 rand, the initial minimum wage was 20 rand, to 20 rand 76 in March last year, to 18 rand 68 for farm workers, and to 15 rand 57 for domestic workers, and then 11 rand 42 for workers employed under the expanded public works program, respectively. So, just on the farm workers and domestic workers, although we have a national minimum wage, at the time, the national minimum wage of 20 rand, it was the first national minimum wage, the 1st of January 2019, was significantly higher than the minimum wages prescribed by the relevant sectoral determinations, one for agriculture, one for forestry, and then one for domestic workers. So it was recommended then by the committee to Deputy President Ramaphosa at the time to phase or equalize the minimum wages of domestic workers and farm workers over time, and to give that task to the National Minimum Wage Commission. That is then within the Act, there's an imperative on the national minimum wage to recommend the equalization of the farm workers and and domestic workers. So we'll get to that, and that is what we've done now. So we also did that task. We had to do that task during the course of last year, which we did, and I'll come back to that. But now we come to the 2021 review, which we published towards the end of last year for public comment, and then submitted it to the minister in the beginning of January. So by then, the end of September last year, we had the research outcomes from these two institutions, and the findings were that there's not been any, there was really been no negative impact on employment as a result of the introduction of the national. So it was a significant finding. So there was not unemployment caused by the introduction of the national minimum wage. The introduction of the national minimum wage led to a statistically significant increase in wages. So statistically, it's noticed that there was an increase in wages overall in low-paid wages, low-pay employees, but it was smaller than expected. There was a smaller than expected improvement in wages for the workers covered by the national minimum wage. But nevertheless, there was a statistically significant increase. There was also found that in agriculture, there was a broad compliance with the national minimum wage, but in the domestic work sector, there were slightly lower, there were lower levels of domestic work, actually paying the prescribed minimum wage in the domestic work sector. Employees considered that the minimum wage for farm and domestic workers was too low. Several argued that it was unfair that the minimum wage in their sectors was lower than the national minimum wage. And ideally, the national minimum wage should be applicable to all employees. Okay, so that was in a summary, a very short summary of some of the most important findings of the two research projects, which are available on the Department of Employment and Labour's website. To come back then to the equalisation of the farm and domestic sectors, a national minimum wage should be applicable to all employees, but in order to avoid excessive disruptions in 2019, the Act established lower minimums for farm and domestic sectors. The tiered system was meant as a temporary measure to gradually phase out within 2 years of the promulgation of the national minimum wage. So the commission had to make the recommendations within 2 years of the promulgation of the minimum wage. So following that transitional phase, the majority of the commissioners recommended that the minimum wage for the agricultural sector be equalized with the national minimum wage rate, which has now will go up to 21.69, because the national minimum wage itself was recommendation accepted by the minister was an increase of CPI plus 1.5%. So the increase for all workers to the national minimum wage this year from the 1st of March will be a 4.5% increase, and the national minimum wage will then be 21.69 per hour, and that will, with the equalization, that same amount will be the national minimum wage for farm workers. Remember, farm workers initially, when their minimum wage was 90% of the national minimum wage. Workers' wages were lower, so it was recommended and accepted by the minister that they'll be paid 88% of the national minimum wage for 2021. And then with the adjustment for 2022, that the domestic wage then also be equalized with the national minimum. So then there will not be a differentiated rate from between domestic and farm workers. This is a table that illustrates that there's been, taking even CPI into consideration, there's been a significant increase over the period from 2003 to 2021 in the farm work sector and domestic work sector. So the farm workers are now equalized, and the domestic worker sector will be equalized in 2022. Thank you. You can move on. there was a minority submission, the commission in terms of its rules seeks to reach consensus in its recommendations to the minister, but unfortunately last year it was not possible to reach consensus. The three business representatives of the commission disagreed with the majority recommendation and recommended that the national minimum wage be increased by 3%, which is the CPI. And they further proposed a phase-in approach over a period of 4 years for the farm and domestic sectors, with no additional increases for farm workers and domestic workers during the present year. Particularly, well, one of the main reasons, of course, was the fact that there was such significant unemployment as a result of the lockdown, and it was felt by the commissioners representing business that it is really not the correct time, it's inopportune time to effect the phasing in over, starting with the phasing in over this year, 2021. Then the process is that our report and recommendations was published for comment, and there were number of comments, 1,520 written submissions were received from stakeholders around the country, and the written submissions were divided, of course, with some supporting the recommended adjustments and arguing for an above inflation increase, as well as an immediate equalization of domestic and farm worker sectors, and some was against the recommended adjustments and equalization. There were many individual employers that made representations, particularly from the agricultural sector, indicating that the increase to the farm workers, the minimum wage of the farm workers, is too significant, and that may lead to unemployment. So we had then submitted to the minister our report, and then report, all the representations were submitted to the minister with the report. When we actually considered the recommendations, we considered as per the National Minimum Wage Act, the cost of living, CPI, the need to retain the value of the national minimum wage, GDP, productivity, ability of employers to carry on their business successfully, operations of it is likely impact on employment and employment creation. The minister then also considered the following factors when he received the our report and all the comments, the majority and minority report, so there were one report and majority and minority views, and then the public views, and he considered the requirement to align minimum wages in the agricultural sector with a general national minimum wage. That was the intention from the start, and the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on workers' wages, poverty and inequality, especially in informal workers and the working poor, the low-income earning workers. And the minister then accepted the recommendations and published the increases that will take effect on the 1st of March 2021. Thank you. It is expected that some employers, particularly small employers, may face challenges as a result of the proposed increases that is shown. There's been a farming group in Agri Forum, also on behalf of the farm workers, sought to have a meeting with the minister. They are not satisfied. They're unhappy with the significant increase of the percentage increase of the farm workers. But the National Minimum Wage Act makes provisions that the challenges to employers can be mitigated by using the exemption process that's provided for by the National Minimum Wage Act and its regulations. So an employer who experiences distress or an employer organization acting on behalf of its members can apply for an exemption. They could have applied from the beginning, but the exemption from the 1st of March when this significant percentage increase is implemented. So employers who cannot afford the payment of the national minimum wage can be exempt from paying it. It's a limited exemption. It's not a an exemption where the national minimum wage, if the exemption application is successful, the national minimum wage can be decreased to 90% of the actual minimum wage. But in the instance of farmers who are now, as employers, who are faced with a significant increase, they are all entitled to be given, if they cannot afford to pay, to pay in 90% of the actual minimum wage. The exemption is operative for a period of a year, and if the farmer then cannot pay at the end of the year, will have to make a new application. So employers are therefore advised to initiate the process by conducting consultations with the trade unions or with affected employees and apply for an exemption. Perhaps just before I talk about the conclusion, I can just pause to refer to the expanded public works program, because their wage is in the schedule limited to 11 rand something. It was initially just 11 rand. And it is not the task, well, the act doesn't specifically give the task to the national minimum wage, consider the minimum wages of these workers. There has been several representations from interested groups and parties that the minimum wage, the expanded public works program workers, should also be increased significantly. But as it stands, that has not been done because it's not a specific instruction to the National Minimum Wage Commission. We have to obtain a request from the minister to investigate that particular wage. And it's pegged at a certain level because of policy considerations. So then, in conclusion, to reach consensus on wages and conditions of employment of vulnerable workers would be ideal for all the parties concerned, but if there's no consensus around these issues in the Commission, the majority decision of the Commission prevails. But having said that, the minority deals with reasons also submitted to the Minister for consideration. So inasmuch as the Act allows for written comments around the proposed adjustment, the Minister's decision is not influenced by the number of comments received, by the contents attached to those written inputs, as well as the range of actual and potential economic impacts. This increase will serve as a starting point not only to cushion the economic growth sustained by the most vulnerable of workers, particularly the farm laborers and domestic workers, but will grant them a dignity of acknowledging their value in society. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Professor. I didn't want to disturb you, because one, it's your maiden invitation to the portfolio committee, and two, practice and the norm has always been that the department that makes a presentation, yours and the chair was yours to give us an overview, but there's no tense match, it's fine. I think the DG, Mr. Nkaliki, will then come in. Is there anything they want to add now, they can add. If there is none, I'll then allow members to ask questions. DJ and Mr. Nkaliki, is there anything that you want to add? DJ, are you still around?
Yes, Chair. No, Chair, I think the chairperson has covered everything. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much again, Professor. Thank you very much. And also when questions are being asked, you will also jot them down. This is how we do it, so that the members will ask questions, all of them. Then when we are done with that process of asking questions, then you will come back yourself as the
as the chairperson of the commission and the department to respond on all the questions. So it's not one question, one answer. So I will allow all members will indicate who want to ask questions and then allow them to ask these questions. I hope you will still be there and I hope you are following the process. Honourable members, there
is... Yes, me.
Michael Cotter.
Michael Bagline.
Just hold on. Honourable Cotter. Honourable Bagram. Mkonto. Honourable Mkonto.
Pinar, please, Jane.
Honourable Pena.
Inanna.
Honourable Inanna. The other question. Okay, I'll then do the last. Honourable Cotter, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the Professor for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, how can you say with absolute certainty that the national minimum wage has not led to job losses? We know that before the national minimum wage was introduced, Treasury estimated that it could lead to 750,000 job losses, and we also know from the quarterly labour force survey released yesterday over 1.4 million people lost their jobs between the fourth quarter of 2019 and the fourth quarter of 2020. And that's not all attributable to the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown. So I'd like to find out from you exactly how you can say with certitude that the national minimum wage has not had disemployment effects. Then secondly, we know that two of the sectors that are able to absorb unskilled labour at scale and therefore reduce the unemployment rate in South Africa are domestic service and agricultural sectors. If the minimum wages for domestic workers and farm workers have been increased by 23% and 16% respectively, which is far above inflation, you mentioned in passing that agricultural unions objected to this, and we've seen since the announcement of the increases that farmers are up in arms. They're talking about increased mechanization, which will result in even greater job losses in the agricultural sector. Can you explain to us exactly how you see this increase in the agricultural sector in particular, but also the domestic service sector, in light of the data that came out of it the day before survey yesterday? How do you see these increases being sustainable, especially in light of the fact that the government itself had to renege on the three-year wage agreements that it had entered into with public servants? Why should private sector employers be any different? It's going to put just as much strain on them, increases. And then thirdly, one of the reasons that you mentioned in your presentation for the introduction of the national minimum wage is to serve the broader policy objectives of reducing poverty and inequality. And I suppose the thinking there is that you are, through the national minimum wage, stimulating demand among lower-income households to save less of their income and consume primarily local goods and services, and that overall this is going to have the effect of increasing aggregate demand and facilitating growth. But can we really say that we are seeing this happen in SA in terms of stimulation of growth? And then my final question, of the 1,520 written submissions that you received from stakeholders around the country, what was the breakdown in numbers of submissions by employers and employees? I note in your final slide that you say that it's not the number of submissions that matter, but the content, which I suppose is ultimately a subjective judgment. But that said, how many of these 1,520 submissions were actually in favour of above inflation increases in the domestic service sector and agricultural sector in particular? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Robert Baker.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it, and thank you to the Professor for the report. It's interesting. I've got a couple of things. First of all, EPWP, you say you have to wait for a specific instruction from the Minister. Well, obviously, you're not going to get a specific instruction from the Minister because government doesn't want to pay employees any more than what they have to. And I think it's pretty rich, and I'd like your comment on it, that government says they can't afford to pay more than 12 Rand, it's 11 Rand 42 or something. But yes, employers in the private sector, they have to. It sounds really particularly weird. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you spoke about compliance, and you said compliance within the farming sector, agricultural sector, was pretty good, but what you didn't say is how much retrenchment took place. In other words, it's all very well for a farmer to say, all right, I'll comply, but I need to reduce my wage bill by the percentage that it went up, so I'll just ask a certain amount of people to leave, which is in fact what we're seeing, and we're seeing it right now. People are getting ready, and you see it in the agricultural sector. I know I've been experiencing it myself, that small-time farmers are in fact now pushing for retrenchment big time, and it's something that you're going to have on your hands, a 0% increase, and in fact a 0% wage. People are going to earn 0 Rand per month if they get retrenched. The report that was sent to the Minister, that report wasn't distributed by the Minister to the public, and so the comments that you saw were without the report. And I find that's a bit odd. Don't you think that the report that you did should have been seen by people who wanted to comment? You have to comment in mid-air, which creates a problem, and I'm not sure how you can comment on that then. You also spoke about the informal workers. Well, obviously, informal workers, most of them don't get anything near a minimum wage, and it's impossible to monitor that. You never will. You also said small employers. You expected them to face certain challenges, and you're saying you're hearing that already. But what we do know is the economists are telling us that it's the small employers that are creating the jobs. Isn't this just a handbrake to job creation? It's very rich again to say, well, we haven't had all that much retrenchment within the small employers, but there's no job creation. And so we're going to go backwards as we're seeing. You are also telling us that you can apply for exemption. I don't know if you've tried to apply for an exemption. It's a difficult process. You almost need an auditor to help you with it. Can you imagine a small business trying to get this together and apply? I tried. I've been practicing law for 35 years and I couldn't get it completely right applying for them. Anyway, the exemption is only for 10%. So some people are saying, well, it's just worth our while not to pay them in the wage altogether and we'll wait to see an inspector. Well, you never see an inspector because there are just so few inspectors. We don't have money to employ inspectors in this country. You said the increase is a starting point, but we had about 40% unemployment. Okay, just for the VM, I want to know why the CCMA is so hardly treated when they are the body that looks after 70% of the workforce. In other words, we've got laws, but we can't implement the laws because the CCMA is on its knees, and maybe the VM can comment on that. And also, we don't have many inspectors in this country. We can't even monitor our minimum wage. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to you, colleague, honorable members. The DM and her team, Professor van der Waal. Chair, I don't know whether I'm audible. I'm not okay today.
You are audible.
Okay, thanks, Chair. My first question, Chair, would be on the submission. I would like to know what was done to ensure that the affected employees participate in the making of submissions, because most of the employees, specifically domestic workers and farm workers, are illiterate, and they might not, even if they are literate, they might not have the necessary things to do the submission. So my question is, what was done to make sure that they reach out to the employees? Because I think the fact that the submission are few is because it's one party that did the submission and the other parties maybe were not. My second question will be on the compliance since 2019. Are we able to monitor compliance? That means, do we have enough? I don't want to make assumptions. I want the department to be the one that is telling us as to exactly, do we have the capacity to monitor compliance of a minimum wage in the whole country and in the sectors that are affected? The last question will be since 2019, do we have any employers that we found that are not complying? Do we have a database of those? And if we do, what has been done to them to ensure that they comply? Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mkhonto. Honourable Dana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Many of my questions, especially with regard to the agricultural sector, has been asked, so I won't repeat myself and ask them again. I'd just like to know as well, and it seems the presentation has almost been prepared in answer to one of my written questions that I submitted last week, so I'm very grateful for that. But first of all, and let me start with the exemptions process. I'd like to know what the timeline is on an adjudication if there is an exemption request. Will exemption be granted in the meantime? For instance, will someone have exemption until the request has been adjudicated? Because we know that these processes can take a very long time, and as Mr. Bagram has mentioned, it can be quite a difficult process. Who will adjudicate these exemption requests? And ultimately, who will decide? If we could just get an explanation on the process, I would appreciate that. And then, also with regards to the EPWP, the chairperson of the Minimum Wage Commission mentioned that a request must be submitted by the minister with regards to the EPWP workers. And I know that there's a sentiment among the majority of the committee members that I've picked up that some parties want a starvation wage to be paid, and that is absolutely not the case. But there are people that physically cannot afford this minimum wage. So I'd like to know how the state can justify paying a starvation wage, because ultimately 11 rand an hour equates to a starvation wage, if you ask me. And yes, Chair, I think that would be my questions for now. I will listen to the answers, and then maybe if you will allow a second round, I will ask them again. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Yinala.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and greeting to all the colleagues and the official present. Chairperson, my question is based on the presentation that the promulgation of this national minimum wage was in response to curtail or to combat poverty, unemployment, and inequality. But the question that I want the presenter to clarify to us is that how would the affected sectors, which is agricultural sector and the domestic workers, been engaged in how to deal with this issue in order to achieve the main objective? The reason I am raising this question is that wherever you go around South Africa, whether you are in the Western Cape, whether you are in Limpopo or Eastern Cape,
those sectors are the most vulnerable and exploited people. They don't have any security of anything if in the agricultural sectors people die, they are kicked out and left alone on the roads, and people go as far up until retirement without anything as the foundation in order to continue with their lives. So this propagation therefore was supposed to, in order to restore the dignity of those people. The question is, do you have the mechanism to monitor that in terms of this regulation, this propagation is implemented to protect those sectors? The second question, Chairperson, is, yes, I understand that the presenter said that the small-scale farmer can apply for the exemption, not to pay for the national minimum wage, but there are big industries who are also having a problem. The Agbiz CEO John Purchase has opposed this minimum wage, saying that they are going to increase the prices and are going to affect the job security. The question therefore is that how did those sectors been engaged, especially the big ones that have opposed this? Because there is no way that we cannot have such big sectors playing this significant role of producing and securing that we do have food, and yet there are those complaints. What is it that is being done in order to have those people be on board? Because the implementation of the minimum wage is needed, but on the other side, how do you get those people to be on board as well? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the honorable members. Mine will be a question which may be bothering in repeating what has been asked, but I want to ask this question within the context, just simply that it is a known fact, Professor, that domestic and farming sector are privately owned sectors. It depends on me to open the door for an inspector who wants to come and ask questions from my domestic worker. It's only depend on me if I want him or her to respond now. And it's also, there's also a high level of intimidation in this sector that we know, which then makes the workers a bit scared to be interviewed or to respond to whoever is here to come and check if then the minimum wage is then being implemented. In the presentations that you have received, and should I then say, did the commission take into account this? Yes, we can't have an inspector for each and every household in South Africa and each and every farm. But it's a known fact that these sectors are vulnerable sectors. High level of intimidation. At some point being politicized for that matter. And our people will be afraid to speak, because a person will say a half a loaf of bread is better than nothing, and therefore will be scared to then say, no, I'm still getting 1.5 a month. Have you looked into this, or you have then said maybe it will be, or you think that it will then be the responsibility of the Department of Employment and Labor to ensure that the compliance and enforcement in terms of the. For me, I really want to ask, because there will be a number, yes, as you heard, that's what people are saying, that well, if I am to increase, I'd rather be without a worker, and that at the end is put into the doorstep
of government. Whereas government is not owning a house. I am owning a house. I am owning a farm. But because we want to employ us and some of us who have got domestic workers, we want to shield against and say, no, no, if government is unable to do this, how am I to do it? Is it fair? So my question actually is about the sector is privately owned, and how then, what will be the measures do we have as a country through the national, through the Department of Health, of Employment and Labor, have that ability and a capacity, but it can't only be the responsibility of government, it's also the responsibility of everyone, including the employers, but we know for a fact that employers in this sector, some of them, are not really sensitive and sympathetic to workers. That is a situation that we can't run away from. So that's why my question, which is more comment and yeah, I thought I need to raise this, because it's quite a challenging situation around this. As Honorable Mkhondo has said, and Honorable Rinan, some of these people are just put out, are thrown outside because employers are not prepared. And in those ladies' departments, when they doing their enforcement, who then have been should be told, in terms of the farm workers in particular, which culprits, who are those culprits in terms of race? We can't run away from that. In terms of race, provinces and regions. Thank you very much. How you will then respond if the government wants to respond first, it's fine. If you want to respond first, it's okay, because our questions, majority of them, are more both to the commission and to the department. Thank you very much. Over to you, Professor.
Yes, Honourable Chairperson, I believe that it is probably then the correct procedure for the department to respond first and then for me to make a comment as they responded. I really beg your pardon, I didn't know that when I was called in that I should not make that presentation. But
No, Prof, don't. Don't worry. It's fine. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll respond to a number of questions, and Mr. Khalif and Prof will then also respond. Mostly, there's a question that was raised by Honorable Bagrain on the exemption, which was also raised by Honorable Ben. I think Mr. Khalifi will respond to that, because when we developed this, the exemption system, we took all these things into account, the difficulty that people will encounter in not only in accessing the system, but also operating the system, and the time that it will take in terms of the adjudication and all that. Those are factored in the development of the system. It actually, it doesn't take more than a day, because you do it yourself. There's no person who's sitting behind, and the system has been programmed in such a way that you're able to get the results of that immediately. But the nitty-gritties of that, Mr. Khalifi will deal with that, but I just wanted to highlight that. Why is the CCMA badly treated by the department? The CCMA is not badly treated by the department. In fact, I've been making this point over and over again, Chairperson, that the budget cuts affected not only the Department of Employment and Labour, but the entire, all the government departments. In our department, CCMA was the least affected entity, and simply because we tried our best to cushion it. Given the important work that the CCMA is doing, we needed to make sure that they do not feel the pinch compared to other entities that experienced exactly the same cuts. So it's not a question of treating the CCMA badly. It's the question of allocating the limited resources that have been given to you in such a way that all the entities of the department are able to function optimally. And the reality is that there are things that we will need to cut, things that are nice things to have, so that we can focus on the service delivery issues. So all of us are called to do that, including the CCMA, and where it's possible as a department, we are able to assist the CCMA. Honorable Kondo raised the issue about if the commission and the department were both able to monitor compliance in the whole country and sectors that are affected. Yes, we are. We're able to do that, and that's why Prof in his presentation was able to indicate that much as we have a lot of noise about the farming sector, in actual fact in terms of compliance based on the inspections that we've done and the research that was done, the farming sector is actually the most complying sector. In fact, of the complaints that we've received as a department, only 3% are attributed to the farming sector. The complaints that we received where we recovered monies from the different sectors, agri sector, constitutes just 3% of that. And by the way, we collected just over 105 million for the whole of last year, 105 million, and we conducted 228,000 inspections, and of those 217,000 workplaces complied, and only 10,444 did not comply. And of those, just to respond to the next question, what happens to these companies that are not complying, 10,387 of them were issued with the statutory notices that inspectors are expected to issue when there's a non-compliance. And of course there's a process that follows after that, because when companies don't comply with the notices that have been issued, then the prosecution process follows. So that's what happened. And yes, we do have a database of the employers who are not who have not been complying, and in instances where they were issued with the notices and did not honor those notices, they were then referred to court. The Honorable Baitra made this point that we do not have the inspectors and therefore it's very difficult to monitor compliance, especially in the formal sector. I mean, that's a fact, that we don't have enough inspectors. And chances are that we will not have enough inspectors given the competing priorities that the country has.
But if you look at the principle of all our labor market policies, they are all based on the principle of self-regulation. Now, you expect that a person who runs a business will be honorable enough to comply with the laws of the country and treat his or her workers with respect and have the duty of care. And that's what we expect. We don't expect that we will have an inspector that will go to all the companies that we have in this country. And by the way, that principle of a duty of, I mean the principle of self-regulation is the one that business fought for, that the legislation should not be prescriptive and that companies should be given space to to self-regulate. And over the years, this has proven to be very, very difficult because of the higher rate of non-compliance. And when you change the legislation to factor that, you're also going to be accused of, treating business with, with disdain in the sense that you're not allowing them space to self-regulate. So, as much as we go out and do inspections, given the limited resources that we have, we cannot be everywhere. And I think that covers the question raised by Honorable Inanna on the mechanisms to protect the vulnerable workers. It's a responsibility of the department, not the commission, to do so. And on a regular basis, we come to the committee, we say to the committee, here's our annual performance plan. And these are the number of inspections that we're going to do over a given period of time. And that's the mechanism that we use. We have different kinds of inspections, proactive inspections, reactive inspections, and we have blitz inspections where we, go to areas that ordinarily would have access to or would be able to reach given the limited numbers of inspectors that we have. So we have a system where we protect the vulnerable workers in the different sectors. And people can phone in and complain, and they will be treated as anonymous, and they will not be exposed. And this system has worked over a number of years. The point raised by the chairperson on the issue relating to domestic and farm sector, it's a fact that the relationship between the farm workers and the domestic workers and their employers, to a larger extent, tends to be a very paternalistic kind of a relationship. Now, which makes it very, very difficult for especially domestic workers to report non-compliance to the department, and which therefore makes it very difficult, even in instances where they have reported for an inspector to go to a work, to go to the workplace, given the fact that domestic workers would be under strict instructions that they should not open for anyone, unless they've been, instructed by the employer to open so that an inspector can have access. Nevertheless, our inspectors do go out and conduct these inspections because we have the law that protects us, that an inspector can go to any workplace and inspect it. And in instances where we have been denied access to workplaces, we have used the services of the South African Police services to assist us to have access to those areas, and we do work with the stakeholders such as AgriSA and others, to make sure that we improve the relationship between farm workers and farmers, and also there's a much more better compliance with the legislation. In the different sectors.
Okay, I'll allow Mr. Mkhalif to just wrap up the few things, and then Prof will then deal with the work that the Commission is doing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Mr. Mkhalif?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members in the DG. I think the first question that I'm going to deal with are the questions asked by Honourable Cardo. The first question that he's asking is, how can the Commission say there were no job losses when instead South Africa report indicates that there were job losses since 2019 or even 2018? Now, the issue is this, Honourable Cardo, that said South Africa says there were job losses, but said South Africa doesn't say that those job losses are as a result of the national minimum wage or anything. They just give the statistics on what the state of the labor market is. The research that we did specifically look at what was the effect of the national minimum wage. Now, we can't go through the whole research. I mean, if honorable members want to read the research, it's available on our site. We can submit it to the committee for them to look why the research reached that conclusion that says, yes, the research doesn't say there's no job losses. The research says those job losses are not as a result of the national minimum wage. There are many factors that influence employment. Even the rate of the rand, if the rand competes negatively against the dollar, it increases petrol and other effects affecting the labor market. Therefore, our research, as the chair indicated, only says, yes, there's been job losses in the labor market, but those job losses cannot be attributed to the national minimum wage. That's what the research says. Now, we can't choose to accept part of the research and not the other part of the research. If we don't like the result of the research, and we can come up with another research that shows differently to that. Now, the next question that Honorable Cardo also leads to this is, can you explain how do we, the increases, whether they are manageable by different companies, companies would be able to manage with these increases? As the chair has indicated, the exemption process is there precisely to deal with those issues. For those companies who think that the increases are not sustainable, they are not able to pay them, they should be able to apply for exemption. If their case, if they can make their case, they should be able to get those exemptions. Does the increase that is given stimulate the growth? Well, economics tell us all that when you stimulate, you give, stimulate, you want to stimulate the demand, you disable income to many people, it should lead to growth in employment and growth to the economy. But obviously, you can't look at that. There are other issues. If other issues affect the price of power, the price of water, and other issues that comes into it, you might do well in this area. For some sectors that operate in that sector, the retail and others that benefit when you increase your grant, you increase your minimum wage, might be doing well. Therefore, might have to look at how did ShopRite, how did other companies, you can say, perform during that period. Whether did that stimulate economic growth in those sectors? But that's not the end of it all. There, as I said, there are other areas that affect economic growth. The next question that was asked was, what is the breakdown of the comment that you received? There's no doubt that if you look at the numbers, the majority of the people who are commented in terms of the paper are people who are saying, no, the increase is not sustainable. But the question that we're asking, if you look on the quality of the submission, then look at how do you calculate the Federation, COSATO, FEDUSA, NAFTU, and they have to comment it. Now, do you count them as one? Remember, they represent more than 2 million workers. How do you calculate? Now, when you've got comment from companies, 1,000 companies, and comments from all the federations saying one thing. If we are going to be looking at the numbers, how do you then take that comment? And then those are the issues that are facing the commission, that are facing the minister, that are facing any policy person who must make decisions on the basis of public comment. And from where we sit, we say, if we're going to be looking purely on the numbers, then we should be able to say the comments made by the four federations in terms of numbers. Remember, we said we've received 1,500 comments. Now, if you dissect the comments from the federation, they represent 2 million workers. They speak on behalf of 2 million workers. Now, why shouldn't we regard that as 2 million people making comments? I mean, if the honorable member can help us with that and justify that we should disregard the 2 million that are behind the names of the people who are commenting on this issue. That's why we're saying when you consider comments, you don't only look at the paper that is in front of you. You look at also the people that are behind the paper. You look on the comments itself, and you look at how does this advance government policy. On the issue of exemption, maybe the chair should ask the department to come here and give a report of what has happened with the exemption over the last year. How many companies have applied for exemption? What was the duration of the time frame in them getting a response on the exemption? Our exemption system works exactly the same way as the tax system. I hope all of us pay tax here. I hope all of us submit a declaration to the tax man on an annual basis. Now, if you submit all the information to SAR, you get a report immediately. Either a report that says there's money due to you, or a report that says you must pay SAR, or a report that says your assessment has been sent in for further investigation. That's how our system works. If an employer submits all the information and the system look at the information because it's done in terms of the system, there's a computer system that does the calculation. Now, if you submit everything, I can't speak about employers who apply for exemption and who do not want to submit financial information. If you say you cannot afford, you should be able to submit your financial statement showing that you cannot afford so that the system can do the necessary calculation. Now, if you submit that information, within 10 minutes you get a response. If your information is up to scratch, within 10 minutes you've got a report. You've got a letter that says this is your exemption. And we're confident that for those employers who have submitted correct information, whose application has not been sent in for audit, have received. Even the audit, in terms of the regulation, there are time frame put in for those that are put on audit. By when should the department finalize the audit that is put in? All that depending on whether the employer who's applying has supplied the information, the correct information. On the issue of EPWP, we need to talk about this. First, the commission can only do what the law allows them to do. Now, this law was debated at NEDLAC. It was agreed at NEDLAC with a very long debate on how to treat EPWP. All parties at NEDLAC, business, labor, government, and community, agreed how to treat EPWP. It's in the law. Any honorable member in this committee who want to change the law so that EPWP to be treated differently, they can do that because the law states clearly that within 2 years the wages of workers in domestic and farm should be equalized within a period of 2 years. It doesn't say the same with EPWP. It doesn't say the same with learnership. And members should not only take EWP, even learnership. Also, the other thing that we need to put is government pays, employs more than 1 million workers in this country, and it pays far above the minimum wage. Therefore, this argument that government is not prepared to comply to pay the minimum wage is not correct. Because for those employees that employ directly by government, they get paid far more than the minimum wage. And therefore, as an employer, government pays the minimum wage. If we want to change the law so that EWP should be treated the same as domestic and farm workers, the avenues are available for the department, they are available for members of parliament, they are available for this committee to change the law. But as it is, the commission and the department can only implement the law. And the EWP wages were increased on the same rate that the minimum wage was increased in. The minimum wage was increased with CPI plus 1.5, and EWP was also increased on those bases. Now, as I've said, that doesn't make sense to criticize government, that government is not prepared to pay the minimum wage that is being paid by private sector. Government pays far, far above that, the minimum wage that is being paid, that is being calculated. DJ, I think I've dealt with all the issues. I mean, Honorable Dinana asked the question on how will we be engaging with the affected sectors who are not able to, who are affected by this legislation in order to make sure that the objective of the law are met. Well, the issues of communication, it's for us as a department and our stakeholders to go out there and make sure that the parties and especially the vulnerable workers are aware what their rights are so that they can also be able to exercise those rights with them. And those are the processes that we as a department will be putting in place. I'm sure there will be advocacy done around the 1st of March in terms of this minimum wage in order to make sure that all parties affected are able to come to the party on this. And on this issue of exemption also, that Honorable, exemption is not only for small business, it's for any business that cannot afford, whether it's big or small. All business can make an application if they cannot afford the minimum wage, as long as they submit the information that is required for the system to adjudicate that. There's no person that is sitting in the department adjudicating exemptions, except those that are sent for audit. Only those that are sent for audit that then you need the human being to look at the information and deal with it. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Wedding.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think most of the issues have been covered. In any event, many of the questions related to issues that the department deal with and not the Commission. I'll just make a few comments. Mr. Nkalipi actually covered the issue of research, so the research outcome was from the Development Policy Research Unit of UCT, led by Professor Arun Bharat. It's a very reputable research institute, and it is available. So we didn't. We based our decision. The commission based its decision on the research output, and the research for the commission will be ongoing. So, come to the second point. So, the effect of the national minimum wage and the increases in the minimum wage will be continue to be monitored. And the effects of it will be monitored on an ongoing basis through this year and the next and the next. I can say that the significant percentage increase for farm and domestic workers came about following a difficult debate at the Commission. It is a policy imperative to equalise. It's now since 2021. And the intention was to equalise, as the minority report indicates. You can also read that from the business members. They cautioned against giving a percentage increase of of such a high percentage in this year. But in the end, the structure, as I indicated, of the commission is that there are 12 commission members with votes, and in the end there was some bargaining that occurred, and that was the outcome of the commission. I won't talk about the exemptions, that's not really within our domain, except that it can cushion the effect of all employers who cannot pay. Mr. Mkalipi dealt with the EDWP issue. As I indicated, I merely indicated that we had no, we really have no authority to entertain the level like we have had a statutory imperative to entertain the farm and domestic workers. Then there was a suggestion that comments were made not based on a report. The report was published in December, and there was at least a month or more given to parties, to any interested person or parties or members of the public to comment on the report. So the report was available. So I don't know where the suggestion came that the report was not available. What I do take was a point made by another Honourable Commissioner, and that is that the report was published in the Government Gazette and there were written representations, the opportunity was given for written representations, and that in future I take the point that the Commission should entertain the possibility of having representations from persons face-to-face or mask-to-mask then, because of the fact that vulnerable employees like farm workers and domestic workers and other vulnerable employees would not have had the opportunity to make representations to the Commission because of the nature that it was in the Government Gazette and it's all written representations. There were several representations from NGOs representing the vulnerable that were included in the representations, but I take the point that the commissioners, the commission's report should be taken to the people and to all people in South Africa.
And members, and I want to just do reflect that there is an information that we need. Honorable Mkalipi did promise that they will circulate as much as in the website, but they will circulate the research document to ourselves so that we do have that research. It's a debate which is quite emotive in its nature, but it's a debate that we'll need members of Parliament, ourselves, obviously driven by the positions of our political parties and the ideology behind that. But in the center, we have got a responsibility of ensuring that if we are to interact with people that have been given a responsibility, in this case, the Commission, that we interact with them, ask these difficult questions, and ask them with an understanding that we are a country like any other country. And I don't think at times, yes, we are comfortable, we are uncomfortable. Pardon me, we are uncomfortable about the number of inspectors that we are having in the country. I want to repeat, there's no country that has got an inspector for each and every household and for each and every farm. I'm making an example about those. But everybody has got a responsibility. I have got a responsibility in my household that I ensure that my helper benefits from this. You have got a responsibility as a farmer
And therefore, it starts with us, with our, if I can say, with our tribe, with our family, with our friends, to ensure that they do what then the law is saying. Because if we keep quiet and we pretend as if government is not doing anything, when in fact ourselves are not doing anything, we will be judged very harsh by this. With the challenges that are there in the country in terms of discuss and a number of things. So that's why I'm saying it's an emotional debate, it's an emotive subject, but together we must then, when we leave this term at the end of 2024, we must then begin to say, we think we have managed to do ABCD for the benefit of the ordinary people in this country. I'm happy that the DG did say, because I've always had in this, but what then becomes, what is the responsibility? I'm sorry, the relationship that you have with stakeholders like, well, the trade union of agricultural forums that are there. So as we are conducting when we do our constituency work, honorable members, we will have to expose some of these things, irrespective. The second issue that I would request that the department assist us with is that as they are, where they are conducting inspections, we must have an audit of these farms and these domestic workers also, in terms of age, in terms of gender, and in terms of race, so that we correct. If we say we want to correct, if we say we want to have a country and have people who feel comfortable, who feel addressed by laws and systems that are there, we have to expose those who are not doing, who are not applying the laws that are there, because they are people that perished, and in them perishing is because they struggled for this country to have some of these laws. They may not be perfect to some, but I do think that we have got a responsibility. And I want to thank the professor, I want to thank members. It's not going to be the last interaction that we're having. As we are doing our work, we'll then have to see where to come, if we are to invite the commissioners to just take us through, ask these difficult questions. But honorable members, when we do our constituency work, let's expose this with the dignity. Obviously, we can't have a hostile and an arrogant environment. Ours is to create an environment which is going to enable environment for the benefit of our people and for the benefit of us to do our work in terms of conducting oversight and ensuring that the department account. I want to thank everyone. We thank you very much, Prof. Don't feel uncomfortable. It's maybe the terminology that we use, but I think it was a different setup. Don't feel uncomfortable and be sorry about that. There was nothing wrong in what you did, but you have done very well, given that it was your maiden visit to our committee. Thank you very much, honorable members, and please, the DG, please, the information that you promised us, can we have that within 7 days, so that we don't have an experience of some of the entities that we asked for an information, and it will take long years until we have
we will have to call a committee for us to get that information. But thank you very much, honorable members. We are going to have a sitting which is then going to reflect on some of the things, and the country, everybody is eager to hear what the Minister of Finance is going to say to the country and the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. You better take your wallet with you to the hearing this afternoon.
Thank
Come
you,
again.
Chair. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have fun.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.